I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Hooney Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
I think the hardest part is the loneliness of all of us. Even if we have Zoom and this and that, it's not the same than, you know, hugging and getting to work and doing teamwork together all day long. And, you know, we are only what our team make us. Danielle, myself, yeah, I'm a guy with talent. I have achieved a lot in my life. I've done a lot, but I never did it alone.
The date is May 29th, 2020, and that is Daniel Boulud, our guest on this 45th and final special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. As always, our great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production cost of these special reports. We wouldn't have been able to deliver them to you without them. Our guest today is a very special person in my life, a very special person in the industry, the great chef Daniel Boulud. Before I introduce Danielle, there are a few things I need to say. This is the last of our nightly special reports, and the conventional wisdom about introductions is to keep them short, but this is my last of 45 special reports. Many of you have been with me for the whole nine-week run. Maybe you didn't listen to every one of them, but we've been together for, you know, most of the length so far of this pandemic, so I hope you'll indulge me for a moment. First of all, I need to address what's going on in Minneapolis right now. And I want to say that I speak solely for myself and not my guests or any supporters of the show. This introduction is being recorded on the morning of Friday, May 29th, 2020. It is the end of a long week. It is a moment in time along the road of a very long struggle. I have mostly veered away from politics on this show, but this week has just been too much. And I don't consider any of what I'm about to say political, actually. I think it's moral. I think it's obvious. I think it must be said. And I think it must not be apologized for. Obviously, this is the week Mr. George Floyd was murdered by four policemen in Minneapolis. That city has been embroiled in protests that have turned destructive for a few nights now. I woke up this morning to see that Omar Jimenez, a CNN reporter, and his associates were arrested for no good reason, trying to do their job overnight, which is a violation of the First Amendment. I also see that the president, and I use that word only because there's really no alternative for the position he holds, has been inciting violence against his own citizens on Twitter with the line, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." And if you don't know just how bad that reference is, I suggest you Google that phrase and you'll have no trouble finding out where it comes from. This episode will live in perpetuity here, and it would be very easy for me to simply do a regular perfunctory introduction for posterity, for anyone listening at a later date, and move along. But I personally felt the need to mark this moment in time. I need to publicly share my sadness at the loss of George Floyd and so many who have gone before him. And I need to state how dismayed and angry I am that these things keep happening in my country. The first similar moment I remember in my life was by a cosmic coincidence, the Overtown riots in South Florida, where I lived at the time, in May 1980. That was 40 years ago this month. That, too, was over the shooting of a black man by the police and their subsequent acquittal. I was 12 years old at the time. I am now 52, and here we still are. I remember the Rodney King verdict handed down in April 1992 in Los Angeles, the police captured on video, beating him mercilessly, and then acquitted, and the violence that followed that. That was almost 30 years ago. By then, I had moved to New York City and joined the workforce, and my friend and coworker, Rod, who is Black, walked in the door to the office that morning, turned to all of us who were already there, and said, "I just need to say that a Black life ain't worth a damn in this country." That was 30 years ago, and what have we got to show for it? There have been too many similar cases to list, and now here we are again, in the midst of a pandemic that didn't need to be this bad here in the U.S., with a president who is clearly unwell, and yes, I mean mentally, and I just can't sit down in front of a microphone this morning and not acknowledge all of that or soften my feelings about it. I am angry. I am scared. I am determined. In whatever way I can be, I'm here for anyone out there who is vulnerable to these people and these forces. I do realize as I say all this that probably it rings somewhat hollow because I am a white man, so it can only mean so much, though as a Jewish American, I should add, I don't consider myself exempt from prejudice and violence, though it's obviously nowhere near the same frequency or scale of what we saw the latest example of in Minneapolis this week. So as I said, I don't apologize for any of that, but I do thank all of you for listening. I know it's not why you come here, but it's the end of a long week, and for me, you know, it's the last of these reports, so maybe I'm feeling a little raw today, but I just needed to say all that. So I do appreciate your listening. Okay. I am here to do a show for the restaurant industry, our last nightly special report. After this, I will revert to our weekly shows again. The next one will be the week of June 8th. I'm not sure exactly what day that week it will drop. Frankly, I'm going to take a little bit of a breather, a little bit of a break, and start putting together what will be a 75 to 90 minute show, I expect, and that's what we'll be doing weekly, I think, for the rest of the summer. If you'd like to hear more of Andrew Talks to Chefs between now and then, I do remind all of you that we have launched a Patreon page that invites you to support the show directly. We do need that support. If you come in at the $10 level per month or more, you get access to bonus content like the two-hour interview with David Kinch that is currently up. We'll be posting June's patron-only show next week. If you'd like to simply support the show without special access, you can also contribute $5 per month to retroactively help fund the more than 150 episodes that are available already and the ones that will come in the future. The site to visit to learn more and become a patron of the show is patreon.com. That's patreon.com/AndrewTalksToChefs. That's also linked to on the episode page for this show at AndrewTalksToChefs.com. I do need to thank, along those lines, a new patron, Lowry Thick, who came in at the $10 level. Thank you very much, Lowry. And as this is the last of our special nightly reports, I need to thank Sam Pellegrino, especially Filippo Mazzaia and Michelle Vieira. When the lockdown came in mid-March, I wanted to do something for the industry, and I asked Sam Pellegrino if they'd be willing to cover the cost of an engineer 5 days a week. They said yes within about an hour, and we were off and running starting on March 18th. With our first nightly special featuring Gavin Kazin, who in another cosmic coincidence is actually based in Minneapolis. The original commitment was for 20 shows. Then I asked Sam Pellegrino to re-up for another 25, and they did, which brings us to today. If not for them, this series would not have existed. It's that simple. I was happy to donate my time and energy to do something I thought was important, something I thought maybe in my own way could be a contribution to the industry and give people a way of connecting a little bit or having a place to come to every day or at least 5 days a week. But there was absolutely no way I would have been able to foot the bill for an engineer 5 days a week and certainly not for 9 weeks. So a huge thank you from the bottom of my heart to Sam Pellegrino for making this happen. It's been an incredible experience and I really appreciate it. My last thank you is to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, who came on board on a day's notice. She was not our weekly engineer prior to the shutdown. And Margaret mixed a show a day for the last 9 weeks. She bent to my schedule when there were hiccups and guest interviews and technical problems on my end. She taught me a lot about recording a better sounding show. In 9 weeks, we did what would have been a year's worth of episodes together on a normal schedule. So thank you, Margaret, for making me better at what I do. And lastly, before I introduce Danielle, I want to say a big thank you to all of you out there in podcast land for listening. Thank you for your direct messages, for your emails, for your ratings and reviews, for your feedback, including critical feedback. That is something I do need to hear, and it does help me get better. I know it sounds hokey, but I really do this show for the listeners, and hearing from you and receiving your support means the world to me. So thank you all for coming on this ride with me, and I hope you'll stay with me as we revert back to doing shows once a week. Okay, with all of that said, let me now introduce Daniel Balude. Do I even need to introduce Daniel Balude? He's one of the most respected and successful chefs in the world. His flagship restaurant, Danielle, in New York City, is long storied. He also owns and operates Café Balude, DB Bistro, and other restaurants in New York and elsewhere. He's a great and generous humanitarian whose many causes include serving as co-president of City Meals on Wheels, which delivers meals to homebound elderly. Danielle has also been an amazing supporter and friend to me long before I had anything like the career I do now. I sort of feel in some ways he saw my career and saw what would become my focus, that being chefs instead of just covering food. I consider myself a chef writer. You know, I think back to things Danielle scribbled in books I asked him to inscribe or things like that. And I think he understood that about me before I understood it about myself. He backed me and vouched for me and encouraged me in ways that helped bolster my standing in the community that we share. He's given me advice when I've needed it. And he did one of the nicest things anybody's ever done for me 2 years ago when, without my asking, he threw me a launch party. And it was an incredible party with a lot of industry veterans in the house for my books, Chefs, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. And that is something that I just, to this day, can't get over. It was like a dream. Danielle also appears on this show without my having invited him. You'll hear about that in the interview. So here you go. I'm honored to have him as our last special report guest. My conversation with the great Danielle Balude.
Hold on 1 second. Let me just grab a plate, make myself a coffee.
I wish I had known. I would have brought my coffee to the interview. We could have had like a, you know, a virtual coffee together.
Yeah, no, exactly. Okay. I'm all yours.
I feel like every time, every third time I speak to you, I need to thank you for something. You're so generous.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for giving me some of your time. I know it's a challenging time, and you're somebody who probably has done more for me than anybody in the industry. And yet, when I just called to check in on you a few weeks ago, and you very generously offered to come on the show. So I'm thrilled to have you here.
Of course. Thank you, Andrew. And I'm thrilled to be able to speak to you, and I wish we could do that on a table across from each other.
I know. One day soon.
Exactly.
And I don't think I told you this, Danielle. It's just the way the timing worked, but I could not be happier about it. You know, I've been doing nightly special reports during the lockdown. This is my 45th one. This is my ninth week.
Congratulations.
And you are going to be my last guest on my nightly reports. After this show, I'm going to go back to weekly. So I'm thrilled to have you.
Excellent.
Nobody I'd rather have.
Thank you. Well, super exciting. And, you know, I have fond memory of what you have accomplished. And you remember in at Café Boulou when we did your book party, that was, to me, the last time we had the opportunity to have great fun together and bring colleagues of the industry together and have a friendly moment. And that we miss those right now, but I'm sure we're going to find opportunity to get them together again soon.
I hope so. And you know, as I've told you, that was one of the great nights of my life.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Listen, I want to catch up. I don't really have an agenda for this conversation, although I'm happy to talk about anything you'd like to talk about. We spoke early in the lockdown, probably maybe at the very end of March. I just called you one Saturday to see how you were doing. Most of what I know about you right now is what I've seen on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I thought I would ask you a little about that.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, first of all, you just launched, you're calling it Danielle Balude Kitchen. Now, you did not immediately do what people call a pivot. I mean, you've been doing things for City Meals and things like that, which I want to ask you about. But you just finally started doing, I guess, what we would call a takeaway service out of your flagship restaurant, out of Restaurant Danielle on the Upper East Side of New York. What exactly are you doing through that, and how's it going so far?
Well, of course, when we closed on March 13, and I was one of the first to close, I closed because I was scared. I was scared for the safety of ourselves, of our staff, of our customer. And, you know, that day I learned within the time I was making the decision to close that Eric was going to close at Le Bernardin and Danny Meyer. And I felt, yeah, we are making the right decision. We may be early in the, and within 5 days, I think the New York City or a week, New York City shut down.
You all did it before it was mandated.
I think it was a crazy decision, but for me, it was the safest decision to do. And, but the hardest because, you know, you are telling your staff that, you know, we have to clean up the house tonight and we don't know when we're going to see each other again because, this is just, a difficult thing and we need to protect every one of us. And of course, within the following week of that, we were really active in trying to figure it out, the support system we could bring to our staff beside, you know, having salary and insurance coverage and all that, because we could see it and this could last longer and there's going to be some hardship situation for many of them. We created Hand in Hands right away, by Danielle Boulou, a charity. We needed to give it a name and I felt Hand in Hands was good because it really was about the generosity of our friends and our customer, you know, giving a hand to our staff as well. We definitely raised quite a lot of money. I mean, over 400,000 right now. And it has been given back to our staff through grants and all that. So they have been really, really appreciative. And we want to make sure that we make these things last as long as we can as well. From there, I didn't reopen the kitchen right away. The focus was how can we bring support to our staff as long as we can? And then within four weeks, we decided to reopen the kitchen. And reopening the kitchen was to reopen downtown kitchen first, our prep kitchen. And that was early April. And my partner at One Vanderbilt, the new restaurant I'm doing on 42nd and Vanderbilt Avenue.
For people who are not in New York City, that's right across from Grand Central Station.
Exactly. And Mark Holliday, the CEO, as we're going to be partner in this new project, this new tower there, and the restaurant opening in early 2021, he approached me and said, Danielle, I want to make sure that I can help you support New York City through meals if you want to reopen your kitchen. And also, I want to create a foundation. We will ask many of my food tenants to be able to maybe reopen their kitchen, reopen their store, and participate in this mission together. And so I was the first one to start right away because I knew that World Central Kitchen needed support as well. And I wanted to really get into the possibility of helping what was the most important at the time, which was the first responder, the nurse, the hospital. And we did that and we offer 15,000 meals or 15 plus thousand meals to World Central Kitchen, fully gifted by Food First Foundation. And we also had a donor, a friend and a customer and a donor who wanted to make a personal gift to an hospital and asked me to make also 6,000 meals for that hospital over a couple of weeks. And that we did that through Restaurant Danielle as well. We reopened the kitchen of Restaurant Danielle. And today I felt that that was the time to enter into a opportunity to create a to-go business. And while downtown in our prep kitchen, we continue to produce thousands of meals for City Meal on Wheel every day. Now uptown, we start the takeout and to go. And it has been good because it has been only second day. And people are very appreciative. It's wonderful to see the picture on Instagram of people being at home and starting to bring all this good food to, you know, they even plate the things like you know, when you order takeout, you can eat in the box, but usually you like, because you're ordering home, you like to put it into your own china and make it nice. And so I think it has been very, very good, but we are skinny skeleton crew right now, and we are growing the program. So right now we are doing a menu with three appetizer choice, three main course, three dessert, or cheese and dessert. That has like such a as a wonderful grill halibut with a medley of peas and herbs, and with also morel and trumpets, and something very seasonal. We have a duo of beef with a spinach subric and wonderful mashed potato, and something a little more, you know, homey but also comforting. There's a lobster salad. There's delicious cucumber soup with smoked salmon. There's white asparagus in season right now, so we take advantage of that. So there's, it's not Restaurant Daniel food.
Right, so it's up to your standards, but it's not the menu items that you would eat in the dining room necessarily.
And then next week we're starting a bistro menu, because I have all these casual restaurants also in New York, and I want to do that, and I will have a, you know, a mean burger, a mean half a pound burger. Because I think if you're going to order a burger on to go, you want the burger to be a good sized burger. So
nice. Great. So Danielle, what's it like? You know, you mentioned how, you know, it's a skeleton crew. I'm sure at some level, it's very heartening for you to be, you know, in your own way, doing takeaway and serving people again. But I have to think it's very, and for people who've never been there, I mean, Restaurant Daniel is a very, you know, it's a very elegant restaurant. It's also, though, a very big restaurant.
Yes.
I mean, for a restaurant of its style, it's probably among the biggest in New York. And I've been in that kitchen, and it is a huge, it's a huge brigade normally. What's it like to be back in there? I would think it's almost surreal to be in there with such a small, intimate group of cooks.
Very much. And, you know, it pinched your heart a little bit to know what it was and how it is today. But we really hope that it will come back to a normalcy, and we will have the vibrant energy and the pressure, the energy, the fun and the passion and the dream we do have every day about the place, you know, about Danielle and the team interaction all the time, and the suppliers interaction and the customer interaction. It's something we miss greatly. And so, you know, we are here. We understand our responsibility. My responsibility was to start to bring some people to work, but also to keep our executive busy, and bring them back to their job as well, and slowly bring also individual employees right now. I'm not so worried about the employee who today are doing very well with the unemployment, and it's not necessary to bring them back to work. But for the people where their compensation were certainly either greater or smaller than unemployment, and they or some people who couldn't collect unemployment, right now, we had some kids in visa, for example, who cannot collect unemployment. And so we want to keep them occupied. We have also a lot of chefs who was placed in private homes, and they are doing a, you know, a job in a private home right now. And I think it's good for them. I'm very happy, and they are safe, and they are occupied as well. So, you know, we want to be able to bring more people. And that, I think, is a question of, I don't think weeks, but months and a half, maybe.
Well, the city hasn't gotten to phase one yet, right? I mean, it's the only county in the state, I think, that hasn't started to reopen, although people seem to feel like it maybe is close at hand.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Danielle, you know, I've been watching on Instagram you cooking a lot. You know, this very you know, kind of classic dishes, very rustic. you know, about 11 years ago, when I was trailing the Bocuse d'Or team, I got to spend some time at your childhood home. I got to spend some time around your parents.
Yes.
You know, I see you cooking at, you know, I mean, I know you're in the city today, but I see you cooking at your place upstate. I see the style of food you're cooking. And part of me, you know, thinks, and I just wanted to ask you, I feel like in some ways you're maybe taking some, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you're taking some comfort or taking some connection from cooking in a style of food that I imagine is not that different from what you grew up eating.
Exactly. I know that I have colleagues who does a better job than me at Instagram, but they don't have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old who need full attention all day long.
Yeah, right.
And my wife and I, we try to share some of the duties with our children. And at the same time, the plan for cooking are very small, very short, and we usually try to order foods and figure it out after what we're gonna do. There's no recipe ever written ahead, and so it's really spontaneous. It is driven a little bit by the ingredients I have, and like the other day, I did a steak. And it was a Côte de Bœuf. It was a beautiful Côte de Bœuf. And I didn't have time to cook a Côte de Bœuf. And then I also like my steak to be seared on more sides than just two. You know what I mean? I wanted to make two steak out of it, but I felt like keeping the bone was good because I like to also eat the meat around the bone. So I just split the Côte de Bœuf in half over the bones and butterfly it and cook it like this. And I'm like, I'm posting this and I'm like, oh God, what do you think people's going to think about me like doing this? And because frankly, I'm just doing it for the practical way of things. And also for the fact that I don't want to cook for hours at home. I just have half an hour and my mise en place is pretty like on the fly. And then when I have commitment to do something like Billion was celebrating their fifth season. And they said, Danielle, do you want to cook for us for Billion together? So, of course, I wanted to do something. So I came to New York in my kitchen at home here in New York. And I was by myself and I could do something a little bit more, according to a plan and according to sort of a set of taping who took me maybe more than an hour to produce everything.
So for people who don't know, Billions is a Showtime show, and it was created by or co-created by and is run by a gentleman named Brian Koppelman. And
yes.
Brian and I have never met. We've traded some direct messages on Twitter. We're supposed to play tennis at some point, but then the pandemic happened. Well, but he's
you better have him on the show.
But he's a huge foodie. He's a huge foodie. And so you did what? So the season premiere of season 5 happened during the pandemic. So you did what? You did a little celebratory like drop-off meal for them?
No, I just inspired the viewer and the fan of Billion by, you know, a chilled cucumber soup I made for Bobby and his gang of friend there. I just felt like that'd be nice to inspire people to make a very good chilled soup for the summer. And of course, because it was Billion, I had a scoop of caviar on it. I love caviar in my soup because the caviar dissipates into this little pearl and it gives you saltiness a little bit and a little bit of brininess. And I think it's very good. But of course, I overdosed a little bit on the caviar for that one. But you can just do the same soup with a little bit less caviar or no caviar and smoked salmon to have also smokiness a little bit. And
so just so I'm understanding, you just made this sort of in honor of the fifth season. It was like a viewing meal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been involved in some of the efforts to advocate for the industry, you know, this organization Big that's taking on the business insurance issue. What is for you the prognosis? Are you feeling optimistic about, you know, either through the efforts of groups like the Independent Restaurant Coalition or through the, you know, the legal action that Big is taking to try to get business interruption insurance?
Or ROAR.
ROAR, which is the New York State
absolutely
group.
And also months and a half, we were asked by the White House that they wanted to meet the chef. And of course, we were four chefs. And this was led by Wolfgang. And he called me. He said, Daniel, would you like to join me? And then Thomas also joined us, and Jean-Georges. So, and then we had also a restaurateur from Texas. So this first initiative, we didn't know what to expect. And we had a call with the president, and we told him already our concern. There were a few concerns. I mean, of course, one of them was the insurance, and the insurance being totally ignoring the fact that this pandemic basically destroyed our industry, and we have no resources of support. And can they at least put pressure on the insurance to agree that this is maybe something which has never been in the language of an insurance coverage, because there was not such a pandemic or virus causing a shutdown nationally of the restaurant business. And so we feel that insurance have been very, very reluctant. I mean, they don't want to hear anything about it, basically.
Yeah. Well, the language, as I understand it, the policies are written in a way that exempts a situation like this, a viral situation, a pandemic. You know, very cleverly, I guess,
yeah,
did this, but it's, you know, everybody will tell you, I mean, in a lot of states, I don't know if it's mandatory everywhere. I think in New York, I mean, isn't it mandatory to have business interruption insurance as a restaurant?
Yes, we have business interruption insurance.
Isn't that a mandatory thing in New York?
Of course.
You have to.
But it's often for many different things, and not this kind of pandemic was going to last 3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Do you feel like you guys are getting any traction? Do you feel like anything's going to happen?
I don't know yet. I think Senator Schumer yesterday say that this will cost trillion and trillion to the insurance to be able to offer any form of coverage to not only our industry, but the world, the business interruption in general. And that it will never happen. So I don't know. But beside that, we also had definitely following this conversation in the White House, which, you know, I'm totally a bipartisan when it comes to our responsibility to be able to help in any kind of way. And by nature of being a chef, I think we love to cook for everyone. You know, there's no right or left. We are just, you know, center and stay there. And but when, you know, when we are asked by the president to be on the phone call, I think it's our duty to listen, to say yes, to listen and agree or disagree. We have to make our points to him. That's the most important thing.
Well, I don't know if this is why you mentioned the bipartisan thing, Danielle, and if I hope you don't mind my asking, but I'm sure you were aware that, you know, feelings run very high about this president. You know, there were people who were upset that you guys, you know, joined a council by this administration. And obviously there were some people who were upset that, you know, it was a group of, you know, as they, you know, it was people from the fine dining world and then people from the corporate restaurant world.
But I really feel the goal was not for us to be able to have access to the president, but for us to bring with us more people into this. So there were many other people who joined us. We were asked to come to the White House last week, and I declined because I could not go there. Neither I wanted to travel and go to D.C., despite the fact that I have my daughter who lives there, and I would have loved to see her. Chef Thomas Keller, really arranged that, and that was the goal for us, is to be, how can we rally? Because we were talking to all the other group and all that. And it's like, how can we bring you now into the White House? And the last time they were, of course, the president of the NRA, but National Restaurant Association, but they were also Will Guidara, which was also representing
the IRC. Yeah. The independent restaurant coalition.
Exactly. And so this was really the goal we had in mind. And I think we achieved it by giving Will the opportunity to be also the voice for IRC and representing IRC. And I think at the same time, this opportunity or this ask we had, we made sure that we used it for every other connection we had with Nancy Pelosi and with all for the Democrat and the Republican of Congress and the Speaker of the House and all that. Every letter we sent to the White House following our conversation, they were going also to Congress and they were going to bipartisan representation in Congress in order to make sure and in our local governor and local authority in order to make sure that we spread the ask not only to one person and one side, but to both sides, and to make sure that they were aware that of what we were asking.
To put it in shorthand, I guess you would say the industry will take help from wherever you can get it. Is that accurate?
Oh yeah, very much. And I'm very happy that this last meeting, I think it was successful in the sense that the administration, as much as we don't always and don't want to agree with, they are listening. They want to know our need. They because they know that we are listening to everyone else, and we don't mind to be the conduit of communication from the rest of our industry.
So Danielle, at a personal level, can I just ask, I hope you don't mind me saying it, because it was not an interview, it was a private conversation. But when we spoke in late March, it was a Saturday afternoon, and it was so interesting for me the way you responded to it, because I asked how you were doing, and you obviously have a lot of restaurants, they're in various countries around the world, you have a lot of employees I know you're eager to put back to work. But on top of all of that, you said to me that you were already starting to go a little crazy because you didn't know how to sit still. You said, I don't have a stack of books I want to read. I want to work, I want to cook. How has it been for you on just a personal level? Someone the other day on the news, they said, this is day 80. I guess it's probably day 90 now, maybe.
I didn't count them.
But it's 3 months already. I mean, how has it been on you for your psyche, just personally?
Yesterday I was telling someone, I said, I've been for 4 decades in America now. Almost 38 years in New York City. So I've seen through the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, 2010s. And I would have never imagined then starting the decade of the 20s that it will be so harsh and so difficult. And I think the hardest part is the loneliness of all of us. Even if we have Zoom and this and that, it's not the same than, hugging and getting to work and doing teamwork together all day long. And to me, I think the hardest part is then it's like if you have a race machine and you dismantle it and try to run it on 4 wheels and push behind, it's not working. You know what I mean? Because all the components who give you the edge are broken. And, we are only what our team make us. Danielle, myself, yeah, I'm a guy with talent. I'm a guy with, I have achieved a lot in my life. I've done a lot, but I never did it alone. And I think the hardest part, is to feel that everybody across, we are all alone and hopeless and have to be patient. And I think that's hard. That's hard on your side because you want to see the people who give you the support and the affection about life every day.
So Danielle, this, as I mentioned, this is our last special edition. I am going to keep doing them once a week. I'm not going to do them every day. But, there's a few thousand people out there listening. Most of them are in the industry. They're mostly cooks and chefs, although not exclusively. What would your message be to your colleagues, to young cooks out there to culinary students who are wondering where the jobs are going to be in the future. What's your message to your colleagues in your community?
My message is that I think the worst is behind us, I hope. And we have to look toward the future, and it might never be the same for a while, but it'll come back to be maybe better, greater than what we ever had. I just hope, because for me, I dream to reopen all my restaurants, to bring back as much staff as possible and to start up again, but also to have the opportunity to think of new things. I don't think restaurants will ever, ever go away. And I don't think the profession of chefs and the service will ever diminish to the point where there's no more opportunity in it. So I think people have to be reasonable, have to be patient, have to be cooperative, have to be ambitious, but also careful. And maybe job opportunity might be different for now, but any opportunity of a job is a good opportunity. And it don't matter for what you'll be asked to do, just to keep learning from it, I think. And there's always way to get what you dream of one day. The world has been through terrible times sometimes with wars and things like that. And when you see countries who have been able to lift themselves out of poverty, out of war, in America, we haven't really gone through maybe a depression such maybe a war can create, but and I've never been through a war either. But I think there's a little bit of a psychologic war in our world, and we have to rebuild.
And that's our show for today, and that is a wrap for our special reports. My great thanks to Daniel Belude for being our final special report guest. Again, please do check out our Patreon page at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/AndrewTalksToChefs. If you enjoyed this show, please do explore our archives at AndrewTalksToChefs.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Please hit the subscribe button wherever you listen. It is free, and new episodes will drop into your podcast queue as they are launched. Please tell your friends about the show however you do that. And please do rate or review us, especially if you listen at Apple Podcasts, where those really help people find the show. I'd love to hear from you about any topics you might like to hear covered on this podcast or any suggestions you have for how it could be better or more useful. Please message me on Instagram. Our handle there is @ChefPodcast, or shoot me an email or voicemail via the links at the bottom of the Andrew Talks to Chefs website. Thank you to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music, and to After School Special for the music you are listening to right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Again, my thanks to Margaret Kelly for mixing these special reports, and my great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. Thank you all for listening. Please do take care of yourselves. Take a breath, and we will all get through this together. I will see you back here in June.